TheBook.com.
Hello, what's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, February 1st edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for this Hump Day broadcast. We'll start things off with Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible for our NFL Week in Review and Super Bowl 51 preview. There are some things to talk about in the NFL, including some front office hirings that Joe wants to give his opinion on. So really looking forward to that. Second half of today's show, our Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. We'll chat Super Bowl 51, also his approach to props, and then the Waste Management Phoenix Open on the PGA Tour down there at TPC Scottsdale, one of my favorite events of the year. One of them, I'm not a diehard golf fan by any means, but as a casual golf fan, I want to find a way to make it down to this tournament sometime. We'll talk about some of the unique elements and challenges that this tournament presents when we discuss with Wes. But first, we're going to talk some pigskin. We'll do that with Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. Joe, how's it going today, man?
I'm going great. Back in Indianapolis, it's time for the biggest game of the year. Pretty fired up.
Well, as you said, back in Indianapolis, and that's something I want to touch on first here, is you have been racking up the miles on, I don't know if it's your vehicle or if it's a rental car or whatever the case may be, but you have been all over the place the last few weeks.
Thankfully, it was a rental and got a little per diem from NFL Draft Bible, so shout out to Rick Saratella for that. But, last 4 weeks, just on the road, Bedford, Texas, to St. Petersburg, Florida, and then finally last week in Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl. So it was the All-Star Circuit. It lasts in the entirety of January, and I even could have gone to a couple more and just squeezed them in within a four-day period. But I think three was good enough for me, and boy, the last two, the Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl, they are the coup de grace. It was two really good events and really great players.
Well, and let's sort of talk about your approach on these trips. I mean, you know, obviously a lot of people know the guys that are going to go in the high rounds of the draft, whether they're playing in the Senior Bowl or not. Of course, a lot of guys go to the Senior Bowl in order to help out their draft stock a little bit, hoping that they show well in practices and then, of course, the game itself. So when you go to these events, what are you looking for? Are you looking for those diamonds in the rough, or are you just trying to dig a little bit deeper on some of the names that have already been discussed?
Well, exactly. I mean, you're looking for someone to make the difference, and in some of those reps that they get from a guy from the SEC versus a guy from the ACC that may not have played during the season, you are looking at ones versus ones, and that really helps your evaluation. I mean, like I said, most of the grunt work and all the dirty stuff's done with the rankings and everything. It's just how these guys stack up shoulder to shoulder, and the Shrine Game, I think, was great for that, in the essence that, you know, a lot of the players that I liked from that game, like Michael Roberts, the tight end from Toledo, he ended up getting called up and ended up playing in the Senior Bowl as well. So got to see two straight weeks of him and just couldn't come away more impressed. And then Jalen Robinette, the receiver from Air Force, same case. He played at the Shrine Game, played so well, got invited up. I mean, sure, some of it is injury, but some of these players, they really surprise you. Well, the last guy I want to bring up from the Shrine Game, that Tyler Hendrickson, the FAU defensive end, I don't even know why he was at the Shrine Game. I think he honestly deserved a spot at the Senior Bowl. There's just been a glut at that position, sort of overload on defensive linemen this year. But that's another guy. I think you just basically go into these events like the Shrine saying, well, who's really standing out? Who's going to, separate themselves from the fray? And I think Hendrickson did that. He, Roberts, and certainly D'Angelo Brown, defensive tackle, Louisville, all those three guys, I think they all made some money.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that Senior Bowl experience, because you got a lot of kids here that, are looking with one eye ahead to the next step, but at the same time, they need to bring a maximum effort here to impress all the talent evaluators, that are around. And this comes from a little bit of a personal standpoint for me. Being in the Cleveland market, and the Browns were the ones responsible for putting all this together. And they did, or for at least putting some of the scouting elements together down there for the Senior Bowl. And it seemed like there was a little bit of discontentment with the way that they had things set up. Did you find that to be a problem as well?
Well, I will say one thing. They, as far as overloads, they had an overload of staff, not just equipment. I mean, media, extra coaches. Like, I'd be surprised if there was an employee of that establishment that was not in Mobile, Alabama last week. I just saw so much Browns gear at LAD, off of campus on LAD. I mean, look, we're talking like downtown at the Renaissance, Brown stuff everywhere. They certainly commanded a lot of seats in the press box. I know that was a little point of contention with the VP there, at the guy running the thing with Rob Hawkway. But regardless of that, I think they really wanted some quality control on the whole process, and who could blame them? This is a great group of players, and particularly the South group that they got. They just, I think, really took over the interview process one day. Was probably one of the another point of contention with the rest of the NFL teams. I think that's what rubbed a few people the wrong way. But outside of that, the only guy that upset me a little bit is Greg Williams. I mean, every other word is a bleep this, bleep that, and, you know, I don't care. NFL Network, you're just going to have to censor me. And, it pretty much a profanity-laced practice session every day from Greg Williams. So that's Cleveland fans, you can look forward to that. But, I mean, outside of it, it was a great group of players, and I think the two locks for first round is O.J. Howard, the tight end, Alabama. He was he entered the game, I think, the best player, and he had a great week of practice. He had a great game. He was rock solid in the interviews. I mean, this kid, I can't believe he stayed for his senior year. He probably would have been a first rounder if he declared as junior, but all he did was solidify his stock. So I think he's far and away the top drafted player from this group. But I really came away impressed. The Temple back, Hassan Reddick, I think he showed that he could play out coverage. He can blitz the passer. He's a form tackler, great in run support. But even past that, what he showed in coverage in those practices put him up an entire extra round. He may be a borderline first-round pick on some teams' boards just because he brings so much to the table. So we're going to be talking about the Patriots or but possibly, you know, a Ravens defender just because of the versatility. He is, he's just that Swiss Army knife. And then Zay Jones, the receiver, I think that guy, he was a Biletnikoff Award finalist, so top three stats-wise. I still think that award is very stats-based, but he doesn't just come from a system. He's not just the next Justin Hardy. He is athletic. He made a number of plays that are just natural, locating the ball, turning, exploding right upfield. He's got the speed. He's got the size. I think Zay Jones just has all the tools to be a starting wide receiver in the NFL. And like I would like to stress, he's not just a product of a college system. That guy has talent for days. So those would be my two moneymakers from the Senior Bowl. And, yeah, still coming away, O.J. Howard, I can't believe what he did. I mean, he basically signed, sealed, delivered, first rounder. You can lock that up.
Well, we'll talk more with you about the NFL draft as we get closer to that and look at some of the prop bets that are out there. But you mentioned Justin Hardy, who's a member of the Atlanta Falcons. They, I don't know if you've heard or not, are playing in the Super Bowl this year. They take on the New England Patriots, mm-hmm. Super Bowl 51 coming up here on Sunday evening. What I really want to do here is I want to focus in on the prop bets because you've got that scouting and talent evaluation background. So I know that as you've watched the film, as you've watched some of these teams, you can pick up on some mismatches. But before we get to that, your thoughts on the Super Bowl line here with New England, a 3-point favorite over Atlanta and a total in the 58.5 range.
That's an awful high total. And I know these two offenses are explosive, and it's Atlanta not being able to stop anybody, but I think at first glance, I look at that and I'm also tempted at an under just because of likelihood, the pressure of the big game, you know, the big lights. So I think that's the one thing I think about, but I still, that's a pretty fair, even line. Especially if you're looking at it, I think that the only reason the Patriots get that three is just got to be their coach. And that's I think that's why it's not potentially a straight up, just because the Falcons have been so hot. So I guess, like I said, I'm surprised the three's on there, but I think that's just Belichick cred putting it out there.
Well, it certainly is, but you and I have sung the praises of Kyle Shanahan all year long, and of course, the addition of Alex Mack. I mean, I don't know if people realize this. Atlanta has a lot of talent, sure. They've got Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, two very skilled running backs in Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, but this offense really went up several notches with Alex Mack, and I know that you're a guy that's big in the trenches. I know a lot of people in this handicapping industry pay close attention to the trenches. I mean, Alex Mack should have his way in this game, right?
Well, it's definitely a leg up, and one of my factors to consider is if there is one team in Bill Belichick's past and one coach in particular that he has struggled with in a scheme, is that zone blocking scheme, Mike Shanahan and the Denver Broncos. If you look back in some of their playoff games, the Broncos did get the best of them. And it's that timing based, that pregame script that has been a little bit of a thorn in England, New England side. So I think that's where definitely they're going to have, I think, a distinct advantage, as long as that reporter that swiped Kyle Shanahan's playbook for a brief instance didn't run to a Kinko's FedEx really quick. But I still think he's got a similar scheme to his dad. He's got the horses to run that ball behind the zone blocking scheme, and you still have to consider their passing offense is a threat, but their quarterback's red hot. So if anything, you know, that's something I don't think a lot of people look at the history of Belichick. It's like, oh, well, he's the greatest coach in the history of the game. That may well be. There have been people to catch him on a bad day, and if anyone's going to do it, it could be a Shanahan.
Well, that's a really excellent point you bring up, because you can talk a lot about schematic advantages here in a game like this where you do have 2 weeks to prepare. And, you know, Kyle Shanahan, as I've said, I mean, this is a guy that turned the Browns offense a few years ago into something respectable. And he really had very few talented pieces on that team. Had a good offensive line, actually a very good offensive line. But at the skill positions, they were not strong. Here with Atlanta, he's got all kinds of talent all over the field. With 2 weeks to prep, you have to figure that he'll be in pretty decent shape. How about the other side of that coin? You've got this New England offensive coaching staff, Josh McDaniels, trying to figure everything out here against Richard Smith's defense for Atlanta. And there have to be advantages on that side of the ball as well, right?
That's the biggest worry for me. To where this New England cut up Pittsburgh, and all they did was a zone area concept. And that's exactly what has been the Seattle Seahawks' trademark of their defense, and what will be Dan Quinn's trademark here. If they just need to really, I think, get out of their comfort zone and start playing matchups. Really, if they just, like I said, go zone area concept, that's playing right into Brady's system with those little running backs that catch so well. And, of course, Martellus Bennett. But Brady gets such a quick release, and, yeah, they may get burned alive if they don't adjust, put their corners out there and just play some man and just match a receiver if they declare. They're really, I think, going to have to get more aggressive, not necessarily in their pass rush and up front. They need to, not that they would care what I think in Atlanta, but I think once you start blitzing Brady and you declare that man, that's when he starts eating you alive, picking you apart, and it may just help them to start doing a little bit more max cover, max drop zone, and just try and win up front with your basic four or a basic three, because he's just it almost sounds simple because they dress it up with the little formation, but he's just running three. He's running one low, and then he'll use the field side wide and run a receiver to the sidelines, and then one deep release to get the over, and if he doesn't find one of the three, the play is over. And I think that's where it sounds boring, it sounds bland and bend but don't break, but that's the way I'd play it if I was Atlanta. Just you got to hope you're winning your one-on-ones with a free knee. Maybe Vic Beasley gets fired up. But, yeah, it's hard not to imagine that Brady's just going to carve him up either way.
All right, well, let's talk about some prop bet stuff here then, because we can start to look at some of these individual matchups. Of course, you've got the chess match between the coordinators, the head coaches with tons of input here with an extra week of preparation. We'll start with the Patriots side here. In terms of some mismatches, do you feel like there's a guy or two on this Patriots offense that, you know, should be in line for a really strong day, whether that's over receptions, over receiving yards, score a touchdown, over rushing yards, anything like that? Where would be the direction you would go with the Patriots in terms of player props?
I'd have a hard time believing that Chris Hogan doesn't go off in this game, and I'd go receptions with him. I don't know how many times he'll be targeted, but he's probably going to get that release on it. Whereas I'd look at Edelman being the guy that Atlanta will at least put Robert Alford on, and he'd have a difficult time getting the mass targets. I still think Martellus Bennett's going to have his work cut out for him with Deion Jones, Vondre Campbell. There's some guys, linebackers and speed guys that can run, and also Keanu Neal patrolling the middle. So I don't know that – I mean, Martellus Bennett could score a touchdown, but I don't know about volume for him. The volume guys I would consider for the Patriots would be Chris Hogan in targets, and then it's hard to imagine – I mean, Deion Lewis, in every game that he's played for them, they basically are undefeated when he's healthy. So he's not only going to be a big part of the game plan, I still think they're going to throw to him. I don't know that there's going to be some huge LeGarrette Blount run party unless they amass some lead. I think this game will be competitive, so I wouldn't look at him as a number of carries. But, yeah, I'd look at receptions for Hogan and Lewis, and then yardage. I might just put a touchdown on Martellus Bennett at some point in this game. He's probably going to find his way to score.
Well, looking here at the Hogan receptions prop over at Bet Online, you've got over under 4.5, the over plus 105, the under minus 135, DSI plus 115 on the over under minus 145, and then 5 dimes, 4.5 plus 110 over under minus 130. The cautionary tale, I guess, here with Chris Hogan, and maybe this is something where you can ease some of my fears a little bit, is that all of the sudden he's become a primary weapon. He's had two really quality playoff games. Prior to that, you know, he wasn't really viewed as a primary option for Tom Brady. Now, of course, things change once you get into the playoffs. Brady's a guy smart enough to find the open receiver. You know, he's done it year after year here, and it's no coincidence this guy's been in so many Super Bowls. But you know, is that a sustainable thing here heading into the Super Bowl, that he can ride the wave of the playoffs? I mean, have they just found something different with him to the point where he's been a more useful option?
I think they've found something, but more importantly, I look at him sort of usurping Malcolm Mitchell in the pecking order, and then also Danny Amendola, where he is in that whole run. Chris Hogan really has, I don't know, I'm not saying set in stone or anything, but he has lightly penciled his name in as the number two receiving option there. And then also some of the deeper routes that Gronkowski was able to do, he's taken away those as options. Not saying he's the threat he is or lining up there. It's just he can do some things out deep to where I don't think they count on the same consistency from Malcolm. And I'm a huge Malcolm Mitchell fan. It's just, I think they look at Hogan as much more reliable outlet there. So that's why I put him, just to say, I think the run not only is real, but he may also just have a spot going into next year for them as part of that offense.
Well, for Hogan right now, it's interesting because over at 5 dimes, where you've got the under 4.5 receptions juiced, you have over 59.5 receiving yards juiced at minus 120. So apparently, according to what's going on over at 5 dimes with some of the betting action, the bookmakers are looking at this as being a spot where maybe Hogan doesn't have the volume, but he has some of the big plays. So we'll see if things do happen to play out in that fashion there. What about Julian Edelman here? You know, I mean, we talk about the New England Patriots and what they're able to do in terms of taking away a team's best player. Will Atlanta be able to do the same thing? You've got Edelman here over under receiving yards, 94.5 at BetOnline. The under minus 120. I mean, obviously this is a guy that's a focal point of this offense. He's the comfortable possession receiver for Tom Brady. Do you feel like he does get bottled up a little bit then?
I like the matchup the Falcons have there with Robert Alford. I would just have to assume they're going to man up on Edelman and make sure that he doesn't kill him underneath on the drags and just the real quick turns that he's able to make in the middle of the field. That's that just right low option for that triangle that Brady runs basically every play. And you just take away the Edelman factor, I think it's a lot less, or a little bit slower death, so to speak. So what kind of athlete Robert Alford is, Southeast Louisiana, kind of sleeper guy. They recently extended him for good reason. And he's also the reason I think they're able to play on without the loss of Trufant there, their top corner. I think he tore his pec, hasn't played in months. But, I think he's he's got the athleticism to run with Edelman and kind of kill those little close routes, those just quick overs right to the sidelines, and Brady eats you for a real quick six. An 8 yard out sometimes can just be the death when you get that second and two, and that's what Edelman sets up. But I really think Alfred's going to be just that type of corner that can turn real quick and just answer and anticipate some of those routes. So that's why I'd look at, not necessarily volume, but hey, not to say he couldn't get burned on one or two. And yeah, the yardage, that could happen. I mean, it only takes two big plays and you're over that, what was it, 94 yards? But I still do like it as far as killing Edelman's volume. And that's honestly the way to sort of stifle that Patriots attack, is getting away that number one and taking away those just little chunk plays that they like to get from him.
So in terms of, let's go to the Atlanta defensive side then, because I know you're talking about, it seems like Robert Alford should have a fairly busy day. His over-under interceptions, if he picks a ball off, it's basically a yes or no prop. If he picks a ball off, plus 650, no, minus 1100. And as we know, Tom Brady hasn't thrown a whole lot of picks here this year. But who do you feel like is really active here defensively in this game for Atlanta? Do you feel like there's somebody you can look at maybe for an over-tackles prop, somebody that can maybe jump a pass, or somebody that's going to get into the backfield and cause some havoc?
It's got to be Keanu Neal. That's the way their defense works. As far as, you know, what I do for a living, IDP for Fantistics.com, give him a shout. that strong safety just outside of the box, if there's a tackle prop on Keanu Neal, I wouldn't be too afraid to take it. Deion Jones is also your other option, but I don't know that it's as reliable, specifically the way the Patriots are going to go between the tight end and those two backs, be it James White, be it Deion Lewis. It could be a busy day for DeAndre Campbell as well as Deion Jones, so they may be fighting each other for tackle totals. But what's always going to be a constant in that defense and that Seattle-style scheme is that strong safety, the Cam Chancellor of this defense. Will darn near every game is going to see 7, 8 total tackles. So if it's at least in the 8 range, I'd be tempted to take the over, because even when the Patriots run, Neal runs in, fills that gap. It was a pick out of necessity in the draft when they took him out of Florida, but it really has panned out. He's not just a tattoo artist or a blow-up hitter. He can't cover, and he makes up for a lot of mistakes in that back half. So, yeah, if any defensive player, it really is on Keanu Neal. He's going to have to be the difference maker if the Falcons want to win this.
Yeah, that number on Keanu Neal, actually, you hit it right on. It's 7.5 flat, so the under and the over both -110 there in that spot. And I like what you mentioned there about him, you know, sort of being that Cam Chancellor type of guy, because every Dan Quinn defense is going to need a player like that, to where you've got somebody that, you know, can get really involved. And obviously, you know, that's the situation that you're looking at here for Seattle. By the way, Cam Chancellor, 7 tackles, 3 assists when Seattle played New England in Super Bowl 49. So that would have easily gotten you over that 7.5 number. Not to say Keanu Neal is as talented as Cam Chancellor, but, you know, like you said, he's going to fill a similar role. How about Vic Beasley? I mean, this guy is a tremendous speed rusher, very, very athletic, guy that can get into the backfield and disrupt things. Do you think he has that type of game here? Of course, his tackles line only 2.5, but looking at his sacks, he's plus 135 to record a sack. Can he get in there and make life difficult for Tom Brady? Or, you know, will Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, with extra time to prepare, figure out ways to kind of chip him a little bit?
Yeah, they're definitely going to have to run a chip on the right side if he lines up there. Marcus Cannon, I think he could beat him. Nate Solder is a little bit of a tougher matchup, longer tackle. But even against Solder, I think Beasley could find his way to at least one. And one of the trickiest parts, though, is going to be how they scheme this. And if they do run an overload, like I said, Brady will make you pay. So if they're doing it the legit, honest way and just running little twists and just doing your basic four, I mean, it still could happen. But even if it is an overload, you could get a freebie here. So I'd be tempted to take Vic Beasley, because one thing else, too, you're looking at those shorter, low to the ground pass rushers that can bend really quick, and a taller guy like Nate Solder can struggle with the guys just to get that low and catch up to them. So I think that's where, yeah, Beasley may have an advantage against some of these linemen. And boy, if Beasley gets in for one or two sacks at any point in this game, that could really be the difference maker that the Falcons need. So, yeah, I hate to say the pressure's on him as well, but that would be something that could sway this game.
Well, something else that could sway this game, we'll look over at the Atlanta offensive side now. Julio Jones, I mean, he hasn't been fully healthy here over the last several weeks, but he does get 2 weeks off in preparation for the Super Bowl. He's going to draw Malcolm Butler. This is going to be the primary matchup here for this Atlanta offense. You certainly want Julio Jones involved. I personally tend to think that Kyle Shanahan's going to use him a little bit more of a decoy to sort of spread the field and get some other guys open. But we've got some high numbers here on Julio Jones. 95.5 receiving yards with minus 115 both ways. Over at DSI, 96.5 at five dimes with plus 110, minus 130 there on that one. Total number of receptions, 6.5. Juice, of course, all over the place on that one. Like we just talked about, the big goal for Bill Belichick has always been to take away that star player. Does Julio Jones get taken away in this game?
I think he potentially could. And I know that is blasphemous for some Julio Jones fans or anyone listening for that matter, but it's not just Malcolm Butler being that good. And you know, this is why I go to the Senior Bowl, by the way. 2 years ago, one of my agent buddies was just in my ear, hey, I've got this kid, Malcolm Butler, West Alabama. He's going to be a Pro Bowler. I'm like, whatever, buddy. I hear you. I hear you. I'll interview him. And you know what? He was right. Malcolm Butler ended up being Pro Bowl, so you got to keep your eyes and ears open down there in Mobile, and now that's the matchup of the biggest game on the biggest stage, and I don't know that it's just Butler is good. He's a press man core. He's super aggressive, but they're going to give him that McCourty help on the backside. They're basically, I think it would be very tough for Julio to go off unless Tate. He did have a Hall of Fame legendary performance in his last game, catching balls, landing on the back of his head, retaining possession. I mean, I think that one, more so than anything, speaks to the toughness, all the injuries he's been through. He is just a specimen. So I'd be reticent to go to the over, though. It's just the scheming, the coaching, the preparation. They will have that plan. They will do something different, and they'll have those meetings in New England where Belichick sits down at the desk and says, if at all costs, we will not get beat by Julio Jones. We will not get beat by Quintores Lopez Jones. So that I think that I would – I'm not saying I'd put – you know, the house on the under or anything, but I'm not touching the over on that.
So if Julio Jones isn't going to have a big game, which is kind of the way that I'm leaning here as I'm sort of researching, and of course with the reputation that we know of the Patriots, and Malcolm Butler is a phenomenal corner, and I completely agree with you there. And the nice thing is with his aggression, he can actually play physical with Julio Jones, who obviously has a size advantage on most corners out there in the NFL. So who's the guy then that'll step up for Atlanta? You have to like some overs in with somebody else, right?
I do. Two guys I'm looking at is that, you know, they can stop Julio and they can try and take away that running game, but I think they've got two horses there. I really like Tevin Coleman, and no, it's not my Indiana University affiliation. It's just the fact that Tevin Coleman is I think the more physical back, he is a pile mover, and not only that, another gifted receiver, just like Devonta Freeman, but more so than Coleman, I really would be tempted to yardage on Taylor Gabriel. I think there's no way that New England could take away all these options. This has got to be the most diverse offense of playmakers. You do have to worry a little bit about Mohamed Sanu, and of course the tight ends are going to be involved to some extent, but Taylor Gabriel is the guy that could blow up. And if there's a yardage guy that I like that has major upside, Gabriel, if he just catches two balls, maybe even three passes, that could amass 80, 90 yards quickly just because of the plays that are given to him. And once again, if he gets singled out on a lesser corner or a sub-package guy, you know, maybe Cyrus Jones, he's questionable for this game, but, you know, if he's playing that dime and it's Taylor Gabriel versus Jones. I'm taking Gabriel every time out of the gate, and that could be a 60-yard pass just on one catch. So he's the guy I really like for yardage, receiving yardage. And then, I'm tempted to just get Tevin Coleman on a touchdown prop, because I think at some point he's another guy. It only takes one with him. We've seen too many games on the pro level and the college level. It's just long gain after long gain. He's outrunning the whole team. It's like, wow, I just didn't think that big guy could run that fast. So I think his speed, it's so surprising, and you just never know until game day just how fast Tevin Coleman really is trucking. So that's a guy I'd be tempted to get a score on Coleman and do a prop that way.
Taylor Gabriel's receiving yards, 50.5 over at DSI, -115 both ways. 50.5 at Five Dimes, -110 both ways. So again, make sure you're shopping around. Also, Taylor Gabriel receptions, the line out there at 3.5. Now the under is -140, but like Joe was just saying, this is not a possession guy. This is not a volume guy. This is a big play guy with a significant amount of speed. And also, you found those spots throughout the year where Kyle Shanahan has time to break down some of these matchups, and all of a sudden he's going to find that guy that is an athletic mismatch. And it seems like Taylor Gabriel, certainly has the possibility to be that guy here in this game. What about the New England side here in terms of defensive props that we're looking at for them? You're going to have Malcolm Butler on Julio Jones. He's going to have his hands full most of the day. So who's going to help out in the running game? Who's going to make those tackles in space? Is there somebody you think can get after Matt Ryan? Who do you think has a big game on the defensive side for New England?
I'd be very tempted to go Chris Long as a long shot for a sack. He finds ways to get these former first rounders from other teams and just use them in just a specialty blitz package. And then Chris Long, the son of Howie, he'll find a way to get in the backfield. The difficulty on getting a high tackle guy out of New England from game to game is Belichick changes it up so rapidly. And even these backers, since Jamie Collins has been traded to the Browns, it has been hit or miss sometimes in tackle totals. Kyle Van Noy, a great addition, the BYU kid that played all his ball at Detroit. And then they got Shea McClellan, who's pretty well traveled now. Both these guys were pass rushers in college, and he's made them into stand-up backers. I guess I'd have to lean Dont'a Hightower. He's also probable for this game. But, yeah, it could be any of the three. I'd still have to stick. If I was doing a defensive prop, I'd look at Chris Long, and then also Rob Ninkovich. There's eventually going to be a way somehow. He'll find his way into the backfield as well. That guy just produced standout. Doing West Lafayette proud there. He's finally back, I think, at least closer to 100% as well. So I'd look for them to find their way into the backfield. As much as I hate to say it, Matthews and Mack, they can't be everywhere. They'll find weaknesses in this offensive line. Matt Ryan's going to have to get rid of the ball quick, and I don't know that he's going to be able to get rid of it every time. So, I'd look at Chris Long.
Ninkovich +220 to record a sack. The only thing I see for Chris Long right now would be to player to record the first sack, which pays 10-1. But again, keep looking out there and shop around. There's props all over the place that are available out there. Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible, really great breakdown here on Super Bowl 51. Obviously, there's a ton of content over at the Draft Bible, so why don't you explain a little bit of what's going on over there right now.
Oh, well, we've made the move back over to free content, by the way. So I would encourage all listeners now, the gates are banged open. They've been kicked open. So we've got late breaking now will be all the combine invites. The Indianapolis Combine here is coming up. So a lot of players have some surprises, some expected. Then all my Senior Bowl reviews, practice reports, Shrine Game practice reports and review are all CGS team, CGS. I mean, basically, if you go to NFLDraftBible.com, there's going to be a whole lot of me over there, but also our rankings, our big board, and all of our scouting reports. It's all hitting a frenzy because we have officially entered draft season, Adam. So it's pretty fast paced over there right now.
You can follow Joe on Twitter at Joe W. Everett. Also, you can follow NFL Draft Bible at NFL Draft Bible. Joe, thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate it. Rest up from all that travel and enjoy the Super Bowl this weekend, man.
All right. Looking forward to it, Adam.
Great stuff there with Joe Everett of NFL Draft Bible. We got one more segment left to go here. We'll bring Wes on in a second. I just want to remind our listeners out there, I was talking about DSI during that prop discussion. So important here this time of the year to be able to shop around for those best prices. We had that segment yesterday with Sports Cheetah talking about some of those arbitrage opportunities that are out there in the marketplace. So you have to have as many sports books at your disposal as possible. If you don't have an account over at DSI, sign up using the promo code BTB Radio. They'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up and an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. One more segment left to go here on this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is our Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate your time, sir. I know you got a lot of stuff going on here, pouring through all this information for the props. Also, we've got golf to talk about here, one of my favorite events that we're going to discuss, the Phoenix Open. Let's start with Super Bowl 51, though. When we last talked, we talked about how there hasn't been a whole lot of movement on the number. We've got a historically high total for the Super Bowl. Still no movement. Where do you think this thing's going to go, and when do you think it'll happen?
Yeah, I think you might start to see some on the total, at least. I think you might start to see some money on the under. I think you've seen a little trickle so far, but I don't really see the total going any higher than it is. I think you'll see maybe some of the sharp or quasi-sharp guys start to kind of bet this under, and maybe that might move down in the 57.5 or 57 range. I do think you'll see that there. You've seen a little bit of kind of back and forth. I mean, obviously more of the tickets are still on the Patriots, but you've seen a little bit of Atlanta money. I mean, right now you've got New England -3 plus $1.05 at Pinnacle, and some of the exchanges are dealing Patriots -3 plus money or -3, -105, somewhere in that area where it's less than the traditional $1.10. So, I think the line is probably going to stay right where it is. I mean, some of the, books that cater to the more recreational bettors might have it 3 juiced up or maybe move it to 3.5. But I think you're going to see it pretty much stay in this range for the duration.
Any insight as to which way you want to go yet, or is this number just too tight for you and you're going to prefer to look the prop route?
Well, I'm looking more myself at the under and maybe even, the first half under as well, because one of the props that I actually have played somewhat frequently, not every year, is if there won't be a score in the first, 6:30. And that's always dangerous when you have an explosive offense like the Falcons. But, usually that's something I at least look at. I think right now the no is plus 140. So I haven't played that yet, but that's usually something I kind of look at more often than not, because this is the Super Bowl and there is a little bit of jitters starting out. And teams got to script their plays a little bit, and maybe they're prone not to make the early mistake, perhaps. So that's kind of a prop I usually at least have on my radar, whether I play it or not.
So I want to get your approach here in terms of the prop market, because as you said, you do have a little bit of a lean to the under here, and you're also looking a little bit at the first half under. So, certainly that's going to dictate some of your mindset when it comes to the props. You're probably going to be a little bit less inclined to play, offensive overs or expect a high scoring game. So, what's been your approach to looking at these props here? I know you said you haven't played a whole lot of them yet. You're probably waiting on some to get a little bit of a better price as well, because you're going to go a little bit contrarian probably to what the public's looking at, and they'll drive up overs all over the place here for this. So what is your approach? Do you just sort of, put everything in a spreadsheet, compare prices, and then start to decide where you go from there?
I mean, I do a little bit of that, and then I kind of look at, what has happened kind of in the last few games, because that's priced into the market. I mean, if you look at something, for example, like we saw in the AFC Championship game where Chris Hogan had, like, the game of his life. But now you're seeing the props kind of with them used to the under. I think 4.5 matches is somewhere around, I think, minus 125, minus 30, pretty standard across the board. So, you know, I'd be inclined to look at the under on that. And just, you know, we do have a large sample size in terms of how Belichick has done in Super Bowls. I mean, he is very much kind of a pass to set up the run. I mean, usually the traditional is, hey, you run the ball so you can set up the passing game. But, you know, he's somebody that really counts on the running game more than I think people think. I mean, you see all the stats Brady puts up and with the passing game. But Belichick, I think, really likes to run the ball in games like these. And so you're seeing, you know, maybe LeGarrette Blount's carries or taking the under on some of the receiver props like Chris Hogan. And then if you look at the defensive side for the Patriots, he's going to try to look to take away your best guy. You know, that's always been his approach. We don't let their best guy beat us. I mean, I'm sure he said in the meetings early in the AFC Championship week, okay, we're not going to let Antonio Brown beat us. You know, we'll live, you know, if we got to live with Eli Rogers or you saw Sammy Coates get a lot of balls thrown his way, because they pretty much did a very good job on Antonio Brown. So that's where you look, I think, with Atlanta. He's probably saying, hey, we don't want to let Julio Jones beat us. So that's where you look at the props for someone like Mohamed Sanu. Even if you think it's going to be a low-scoring game, that's where you look, well, okay, if he can't get it to Julio Jones, he's got to get it to somebody. So that's where you maybe look at some of the Mohamed Sanu props in terms of total receptions. I think it's over 4 pretty much across the board. And that might be somewhere where you want to look, or over receptions for Tevin Coleman. We know that Kyle Shanahan likes to use the receivers in the passing game. And, you know, seeing some of the pressure that the Patriots can bring, where Matt Ryan might have to get that ball out a little faster, well, you know, it might be get the ball out to Tevin Coleman, let him make a play in space. And, you know, I think they use Coleman a little bit more in the passing game than Freeman. So, you know, that's where you might want to look at over 3 receptions for Tevin Coleman.
Well, that's certainly what our listeners want to do out there. Start to consider game flow when you're looking at this. I mean, obviously, you know, people are expecting a fairly high-scoring game with the highest total ever, but that doesn't mean that you play blanket overs with everybody, because some guys are going to be taken away here in this defensive game plan, and you want to try to find the ones that aren't going to be taken away, and that's a lot easier said than done. Wes, what about defensive props? I mean, there's a lot of inherent variance built into prop betting anyway, because, you know, you just don't know. I mean, it's one of the things that makes daily fantasy pretty hard, is that you just don't really know who's going to show up that day. You can do all the scouting, all the planning that you want, but then those guys still have to make those catches. You know, the game plan has to work out the way that you expect it to. So what about on the defensive side, where, you know, we're talking about things that are a little bit more subjective, like tackles, you know, sacks are, may happen. They may not happen. You've got two really good quarterbacks here that get the ball out quick. Are you shying away from defensive props a little bit more here in this Super Bowl, or do you think that there's more value on them simply because this game theoretically should see more points, which would mean more opportunities for the defense to make plays?
I think there actually could be more value. And usually I remember one prop I gave out and I hit last year was Danny Trevathan over the tackles, which got there late in the fourth quarter. I mean, sometimes if you do these, you're going to be sweating these a little bit, you know, and they might get there late on seemingly an innocuous or meaningless play. But, you know, I think that's a market that you really don't see as much movement, because everybody's, you know, most people that will play these props are going to play the quarterback props, the running back props, or they're going to play. We always talk about it. I'm sure you maybe have talked about it with previous guests. Public loves to take, will there be a safety? Will there be a special teams touchdown? Will there, you know, 2-point conversion, longest field goal? And then, you know, you're more
maybe some of your cross-sport props, but I think especially your defense and your cross-sport props, you don't really get a ton of movement because most of the action that you're getting on those are probably guys that really do their homework on this stuff. You know, they're not the casual bettors because it's a lot easier to bet over under Tom Brady passing yards or Devontae Freeman rushing yards than it is to bet, you know, will Vic Beasley have a sack or how many tackles will, you know, Patrick Chung have or something like that. So usually that's something I'll try to dig through over the weekend and see if I can find something, some kind of tackle prop, you know, especially if one of the linebackers or the safeties on a team and see if you can find something there. So that is a market that is kind of ignored, I think, with Super Bowl props. But if you really do your work, you can find some winners and find some value there.
Well, let's go out to the desert here. Last year we had both events going on in Arizona. We had Super Bowl 50 Super Bowl 50 wasn't in Arizona last year, was it? I can't even remember now. Everything runs together. Where was the Super Bowl last year? Levi's Stadium?
It the Super Bowl, the television, because of the playoff with Fowler and Matsuyama, and fortunate enough to be on the good end of it there. But I remember thinking, is this playoff going to get over? Because I don't want to turn from the playoff. I mean, obviously everybody's focused on the Super Bowl, but it's like, well, I got a future going on here. So, you know. And that probably is going to pay better than whatever I would do on the Super Bowl. So I was paying attention to that while the rest of America seemed to be focused on the football game.
It was actually 2 years ago. The Super Bowl was in Glendale, and then you also had this tournament going on at TPC Scottsdale, so my apologies for that. But this is a significant event for the PGA Tour. It doesn't mean anything more than other events from a point standpoint or from a money standpoint and all that, but this is a lot of fun. I think a lot of players genuinely enjoy this because it's a departure from the norm. It's much different than what they're generally used to here because it's a party atmosphere. You've got Arizona State pretty close by. You've got the Coliseum, of course, on the par 316th. So does that make this event more challenging for you because you're not exactly sure how some players will react? Or does it make it a little bit easier for you because you know you can take the guys that are a little bit more laid back, a little bit more immune to pressure?
Well, it really probably is a little bit more of the latter because if you're looking at this year, it's up at the same time on the European Tour with the Dubai Classic. You look at the field in the Dubai Desert Classic. I mean, Tiger's playing in it because, I mean, he has a history with the event, but there's not many Americans going over there and playing in Dubai. You know, a lot of the people, if they're not taking the week off this week, a lot of the high profile players are playing here in Phoenix, and I mean you've got a very good field here, and you're not seeing all the Americans go over and take the appearances at Dubai like in the old days. I mean, guys are either seemingly the guys that are at the top of the world rankings that aren't European are either playing this event or they're taking this event off. I mean, you don't have Jason Day or Dustin Johnson or Adam Scott in there, but you've got a very good field. So I think guys have a lot of fun in this. I think this is an event that's been on the tour for a long time. It's very well attended. It's very financially successful, obviously, with selling sponsorship and selling business-type ticket packages and suites and what have you. So, you know, it is a fun atmosphere, and I think it's a good point in the schedule for guys. So you've got a pretty good turnout in the field this year.
Well, and a rare departure from what you usually do, you've actually got the chalk here in this tournament with Jordan Spieth at 9-1. Now, of course, over on your Twitter timeline, at Wes Reynolds, the number one, you break down how many units you've played on all of these guys. You've got a 2-unit play on Spieth because he is the favorite here. And, of course, this number's actually moved down at some books. I know Five Dimes has it plus 770 right now. Over at DSI, it's plus 923. So it's still in that 9-1 range. But like I said, you generally like those value guys in the 30, 40, 50 to 1 range. What is it about Spieth that you like here so much this week?
Well, in terms of how he has played so far this year, I thought he played great in Hawaii with two third-place finishes. I mean, And it was actually his best buddy, Justin Thomas, that beat him in both tournaments. So, you know, I think as good of friends as they are, I think Jordan Spieth is going to take that as a little bit of a motivation, him and his longtime caddy, Michael Greller. You know, his greens and regulation numbers were terrific. He was 11th in Kapalua, first in Wailea. And this isn't a course. It's, you know, mid-7,200 yards. So it isn't really a bomber's type of course. This is the place where you've got to really hit greens. And I think that's the area where he's really worked on. He's always been a pretty solid putter. He usually will keep it in the fairway. He went wayward a little bit with his driver last year, but He realizes that, okay, I got to be pretty accurate with my ball striking and with my approaches if I'm going to continue to win at the rate I've been doing. So, you know, it's a course where you're going to see scoring. I mean, the winning score is usually anywhere from between, you know, 14 to like 19 or 20 under. So, you know, you can score on this course, but you've got to be a good ball striker, and I think he's really starting to come around on that. He's only played here once, and that was 2 years ago when he was seventh. So that was actually his debut that year. But he's not a guy with a ton of history, but I don't think that should necessarily work against him. So I think he could be a man on a mission here this week. And I usually don't like to take one of the short-priced guys, but you know, he just spent too many marks for me to ignore him.
Now, you have 11 guys on your list over on your Twitter timeline. One of them that's not on your list is Jon Rahm, who won last week, picked up his first PGA Tour victory. I'm always wary of those guys the following week because I'm just not sure, you know, that pressure is off. So maybe that's a determining factor for people liking him this week. But you know, I mean, you're coming off your first win. You probably live it up Sunday night, carry that over into Monday. Then Tuesday, you start to put yourself in the right mindset here for this next tournament. Are you surprised to see some of the sharper guys in the golf market looking at him here?
Yes and no, I guess. I mean, usually I don't like to take a lot of back-to-back guys, especially a guy that just got his first win. But he's played well, and I mean, you know, you can't ignore him. I mean, if you're doing a DraftKings lineup and you kind of deal in that market rather than a traditional futures market, I think you probably got to include him somewhere on your roster. I mean, it's a risk reward type of deal, but you know, he's pretty good for this course. I think he fits well. He obviously played at Arizona State, so he knows this course inside and out. He was fifth here 2 years ago when he was the world number one as an amateur. So, you know, is this a Justin Thomas thing where he parlays that into? It was a little too much risk for me maybe to do a future, and plus now he's been beaten down to about 22 or 20 to 1. You know, I certainly might have taken a shot with him if he was in the, like, 30 to 1 range, but he wasn't going to be after his win last week in San Diego. So it wouldn't shock me to see him play really well this week, but I just shied away from that because I just don't like to back those back-to-back guys.
One guy you do have on your card here, and it's been almost a year since he's won an event, and this is one that kind of stood out to me a little bit. I mentioned him both in my preview and in my daily fantasy piece. Bubba Watson. We haven't heard much from Bubba Watson here in recent years, but it's hard to find a guy that's got better form on this course than him.
Yeah, he's last year he was a disappointing by his standards and by his form standards, 14th, but back-to-back seconds here and another top five here. Bubba Watson, I noticed that he has been in the area, though, for a couple weeks here in Phoenix, so I think he really geared a lot toward this event. And just looking on Twitter, he is, of course, sponsored by Ping, which is based out there in Scottsdale, Arizona. And so he was out there doing something. I saw that he had posted a picture of him and his son in the gold putter room at the King headquarters out there. So I think he's geared toward this event. He's been there for a couple weeks. So, you know, he's a guy that I think is a little bit under the radar, if you want to say. I mean, for a guy that's a two-time major champion, because you're seeing obviously Spieth, Matsuyama, John Rahm getting back, you know, some of the guys that are kind of the horses for courses. Phil is always going to get back in here as kind of the native son of the area and a guy that's won a couple times here. So Bubba was kind of one of those guys that I felt was a little bit under the radar this week. You don't have a lot of recent form necessarily to go on, but I think it wouldn't surprise me to see him kind of come, I don't want to say out of nowhere, because, I mean, he's still in the 30 to 35 to 1 range, but, you know, could see him going kind of well here where it's like, hey, don't forget about me.
This guy's not on your card either, but I want to bring this up for our listeners because, you know, I talk about the importance of being able to shop around. Matt Kuchar is in this event this week. He's 70 to 1 at five dimes. He's only 40 to 1 at DSI, which is a remarkable difference. You really don't see that from sportsbook to sportsbook out there. If you can catch a 70 to 1 type price, is he a guy that's worth looking at, or are you worried because it really hasn't played a whole lot of events lately?
I think he actually is a guy worth looking at, and he is, if you pay attention to kind of the daily fantasy DraftKings market, he's only $7.4 million, and excuse me, I think that's actually a lot of value. He usually kind of likes to start the year fairly quickly. He was sixth here back in 2009, and over the last 7 years, if you look at how he starts kind of in the new year, third, sixth, 22nd, ninth, sixth, 17th, 13th. So, you know, top 20 finish, top 10 finish. He probably has a lot of value. I mean, you usually don't see a Matt Kuchar take, you know, get this kind of value. Did finish the year well last year. He won the Greg Norman Shark Shootout with Harris English. So he does have a win, and we kind of saw that actually last year when or the year before when Jason Duffner actually won that Shark Shootout event. I believe he was partnered with Brent Snedeker. I can't quite remember, but I know Duffner was on the winning team of that event. And then he went on a couple months later to win the Career Builder Challenge out at Palm Desert. So, you know, Matt Kuchar definitely has some value here. And, you know, you usually don't see him at 70 to 1.
So, like I said, you've got 11 guys on your card. We picked out Spieth and Bubba Watson. Who are a couple others that you want to tell our listeners about here?
Well, and a couple of these guys, you know, I usually don't like, I don't want to play that many guys, but some of them I'm playing, you know, a 0.1 unit or 0.15 unit. Went with Keegan Bradley, actually, at 55 to 1. Bradley's a guy that I think has kind of found his game. He's recently married, was married late last year, and sometimes, you know, married life or having a baby, those nappy throughs are sometimes very good for guys. Finished very well at Torrey Pines last week and shot great in the final round and ended up finishing fourth. You know, got a solid record here. He's been in the top 25 four out of the five times he's entered the event. The putter seems to be getting a little bit better. I mean, you would have thought, you know, getting away from the anchored punter, that would be bad for him, but he was fourth in greens in regulation last week, and he was top five in putting last week at Torrey Pines. So I think you're kind of seeing him get a little bit, you know, he's on the come, basically. If you looked at late last year, he was 22nd at the old Fry's. I forget what it's even called now, Silverado. It's not the Fry's anymore, but sixth in Malaysia, was seventh in the event at Las Vegas, 15th in Mexico, fourth last week in San Diego. So you're seeing a guy that I think is starting to put a lot of good finishes together. And usually when a guy does that, a win's not far behind. So Bradley, a guy between 50 and 60 to 1. Is good. A couple of the long shots, especially one that played well last week, Ollie Snyderjen, who was in contention on Sunday, just didn't get a lot going. 120 to 1. And seeing John Rahm when Snydergens was also a very highly acclaimed college player at Georgia Tech, was ranked very high on the amateur list. So he is a guy I would definitely look at. Roberto Castro is getting a lot of love, and you can maybe find him anywhere between 80 and 100 to 1, really good ball striker. So those are guys to look at. Also, Russell Knox, terrific ball striker, 50 to 1. So those are some guys that are maybe a little bit under the first tier of guys that you would traditionally look at to win this tournament. So I think you could go a variety of different ways, and what makes this a fun tournament is it's not just for the Bombers, it's really for everybody. So you'll see short hitters high up there on the leaderboard with a couple Bombers. So that's what I think makes it pretty wide open.
A lot of good insights today from Wes Reynolds. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, the number one. I'm sure he'll have up some matchups for this tournament as well, along with some of his prop card for Super Bowl 51. But, Wes, thanks for joining us. Good luck with everything this week, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Adam. Always a pleasure.
A lot of good stuff there on Super Bowl 51, also the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Make sure you get a chance to watch this one if you can, because I'm sure you're going to hear some pretty amusing things that will probably wind up becoming Twitter sensations here this weekend. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll have our Powers Pick segment with Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com, talking about Super Bowl 51. Also, college basketball capping with Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We'll get his thoughts on the prop bets as well, but we'll also look mostly at college basketball with him. And then Friday, Rob Pozzola of Prediction Machine will join us. The second half of the show, first half of the show, we'll have Brent, bookmaker from DSI Sportsbook. He'll tell us what's going on with the sharp action. As far as UFC, I'm not sure yet. I haven't talked to Jay Primetown, so I don't know if that will be a thing on our Thursday show or not. You'll just have to tune in to find out. But for our listeners out there, I want to stress this to you. We've had some very, very strong shows here of late. More often than not, I think our shows are all really good. Certainly, there are some that are kind of up and down a little bit. But for the most part, I think we turn out a really good product. But some of our most recent shows have just been very, very strong. So if you've missed anything, and of course, with 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, there's a little bit more of a shelf life on some of these things. Head on over to bangthebook.com, click on that podcast tab. If you've missed anything, we cut all the segments down for you so you don't have the whole shows. You can just pick and choose what you want to listen to. Those are available. Also, the segments get posted on Spreaker, so that's an option for you as well. But you want to make sure that we've got you completely covered here for Super Bowl 51. So far, I think we've done a great job. We still have plenty more to go. So thank you very much for joining me, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.